left corner to Aginla. Aginla the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aginla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, let's get at it, and welcome to the Scotiabank Saddledome on this Thursday, January 30th. From the Hot Stove Lounge, it's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. And this hour of Flames Talk's underway wherever you get your podcast, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Hopefully your week is going along nicely. It's another game day here from the Dome. That's what Vickers and I are doing here in the Hot Stove Lounge. Hello, buddy. How are we doing?
I'm doing good. Do I understand this correctly? We got a well-rested Pat Steinberg today?
Yeah, a little unintentional game day nap. I'm
best
all about
ones.
It. Let's
best
go.
Things.
Hey, how about some good news on this Thursday? Wasn't necessarily expecting it, but it actually kind of works. And I know the angle that Wes Gilbertson was thinking when he went down this road, because for the first time since Connor Zary got hurt on January 11th, 9 games ago, the Flames are taking on the team that, that was the opponent the night that Zary went down. That would be the Anaheim Ducks. Flames have been without Zary for the last 9 games with that knee injury. Craig Conroy told us a few days after it happened that he's going to be out a while, but he's not coming back anytime soon, but he will be back this season, and it sounds like that's very much on track as the Flames get set to take on the Anaheim Ducks on this Thursday night. This was head coach Ryan Huska after morning skates when it comes to the latest on Connor Zary.
We're hopeful that he'll be on the ice in a very limited way here over the next week or so. I mean, he's still got a ways to go, don't get me wrong, but he's doing really well with his rehab, so we're pretty excited about that.
When you say he's got a ways to go still, is there a projected timeline for him?
No, not yet.
So nothing concrete in terms of when we might see Connor Zary back, but start to skate, do some light skates, maybe even before the Flames break for the Four Nations, and that all of a sudden gives you a pretty good feel that, hey, there's... feels like they're going to get him at some point down the stretch, whether it's right after the Four Nations break or sometime after the Four Nations break. Feels like Zary coming back for a good chunk of the stretch drive is something that is more than realistic and kind of feels like is on track. When the Flames have finished their schedule, they'll have played 56 of 82, so they will have 26 games remaining when they hit the Four Nations break. And that was quick math, but I'm pretty sure
accurate.
That's correct.
It was. I was working alongside you there, don't worry.
So 26 games, and if you can get Zary back for even 15 of those, that's a massive boost, if not more. So yeah, they've certainly missed him, and I know that the offense hasn't taken a massive hit. They've scored 25 goals in the 9 games that he has not played. They've won 5, lost 4 of the 9 games since Connor Zary's been out. 3 times in those 9 games they've scored 5, but They still miss him. They miss him as their third center. They miss him on the power play. And they just miss that kick, that dynamic type of offensive player that, you know, by and large, they haven't had all season unless it was coming from number 47.
Yeah, for my money, he was one of Calgary's most dynamic forwards, if not the most dynamic forward at the time of his injury. And he was third in team scoring. Like, the stats don't reflect, I think, fairly or accurately, the impact that he had in terms of being going over the boards, generating momentum, bringing fans to the edge of their seats, and to a certain degree finishing 10 goals, 12 points, or 10 goals, 12 assists for 22 points in 40 games. That was third on the team at the time of his injury. And yeah, for me, many nights, he was their most dynamic player.
Yeah.
And you see the hit that knocks him out, and the initial reaction is, I'm not going to lie, mine was anyway, see you next year. And then you get the news from
Craig
Conroy.
Well, especially knowing that they've already had two injuries that have ended season.
It's right, like, oh, in Mantha and Kirkland. And
you're like, maybe this is just the year of season-ending injuries.
Well, and just watching how his leg, I don't know if reacted is the right word, but seeing how it the two legs hit and seeing how his moved, instantly made me think that, you know what, this was going to be a case where he was going to be the third that was lost for the year. So to hear Craig Conroy shortly thereafter say, you know, we're optimistic, and getting the update from Ryan Huska on Thursday morning saying he's going to resume light skating hopefully within the next week. No timeline, which is perfectly fine, but the fact that he will even be able to get out on the ice on his own and start doing some drills and doing some light skating, that is very good news for the Calgary Flames. Because again, for me, and I don't know where you are on it, but for me, he was the most just purely dynamic player.
I agree.
Up front for the Flames.
Well, and I mean, the other thing that made that so concerning when it happened was you don't usually see a guy holding the trainer's hand. Like when he was holding Kent Kubelka's hand on the ice, you're like, oh boy, that must be major. And it wasn't minor, don't get me wrong.
Right.
It's not like it ended up being just a little nick or cut and he was able to come back 2 days later. He's missed 9 games. So he's already missed like a tenth of a season. And when it's all said and done, he's probably going to miss, you know, 15, 20 games. Who knows what it ends up being. So that's, you know, bordering on a quarter of a season that he's going to end up missing here. The 2 week break for the Four Nations, though, is a really nicely placed thing for a good chunk of players, whether it's Kevin Ball, who we'll talk about a little bit later on, whether it's Zeri, or countless other players around the league. That 2 weeks and that additional amount of rest without missing any games, we don't usually see that. What the All-Star break is usually 5-6 days as opposed to 14. So it's a really, really significant little break, and the good news is that, hey, they can still be skating. Zeri can still be out there doing some informal captain skates or just be skating on his own, and he's even allowed to, because he's injured, he's allowed to skate with team personnel
right
over the two-week break, whereas non-injured guys are not. So, yeah, it's significant news. I do think getting him back for however long they can get him back for, whenever they can for the stretch drive, is huge. I would also say, I remember when Zeri came back after missing about 9-10 games last year, was a little sluggish off the top and took him a little bit of time to get back into it. So give him a little bit of time. But yeah, I mean, having one of your most important offensive players back in the lineup for the final quarter and a bit of a season where it looks like you're going to be fighting for your life for a playoff spot, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Well, and it gives Ryan Huska and the coaching staff a lot more flexibility in terms of trying combinations, looking at lines, looking at special teams units. Connor Zeri obviously was a big factor on the power play as well, with 9 power play points. It just allows, again, for a little bit more tinkering that you're able to do. Maybe if something's not going, you can move things around a bit. And again, he was your third leading scorer on the team at time of injury, and collectively the most dynamic offensive talent. You have certainly the most dynamic young offensive talent in terms of pulling butts out of seats whenever he has the puck. So just really positive news from Ryan Huska on Connor Zeri today.
Well, and I mean, I get that question all the time, like, well, where does he fit?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, he fits as one of your three centers as soon as he comes back.
Do you think so, hey?
He was one of their three best centers before, was
so
he not?
He was. I certainly will not disagree with that. But the fact that you mentioned last year, when coming off of injury, he was slow to go. If Sharon Govich is able to continue to do what he does down the middle, I would probably ease Zeri in on the wing on one of the top two lines, to be perfectly honest with you. And it goes back to being able to tinker, experiment, see some different things. Putting Connor Zeri back to the middle after being out for a significant chunk of time, I think I'm more inclined to put him in the wing to get him back up to 100% NHL pace, which is going to be March or April type pacing.
Well, I guess it comes down to, is Zeri a center for you?
I would move him back to center once he's up. Yeah, he is.
But would you do that with any other full-time center? Like,
I don't think he has the track record to call him a full-time center yet. And no, and I'm not saying he has a history of starting slow coming off of injury, but I think you set him up to succeed better, insulating him a little bit, putting him on a line, whether it's with Huberto and Kadri, or if you've somehow along the way have tinkered with Backlund, Coleman, Coronado, putting him with Backlund and Coleman if Coronado is elevated. I just think there are places that you can put him in the lineup that all of a sudden you're not thrust into as high a pressure situation of,
yeah,
okay, you haven't played an NHL game, but we're going to make you work down the middle and play a 200-foot game while coming back after having not played for X number of time.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a long-term thing, but I could see it for 5 games or so until you're comfortable enough that Zeri's back to where he needs to be to sort of quarterback his own line.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I have no issue with that, as long as he had finally solved the center ice issue.
Absolutely.
And I think Sharon Govich has performed valiantly, but I still don't think that that is your permanent.
Yeah, and I'm not trying to have an argument that Sharon Govich is suddenly your number three center for the bulk or for the duration of the rest of the season. And sorry, Zara, you've lost your spot at center.
Right.
No, I'm just saying, from my perspective, if I. Well, and again, it all depends on how Zeri responds through his own skates, when he gets back with the team, that sort of thing, and where he's at. I can just see, from my perspective, wanting to insulate him a little bit and getting him into games on the wing before I return him back to his spot. But yes, to your point, I do see him as a center.
It has been Sharon Govich who's been forced there. I mean, the Flames were in a situation where they didn't have a lot of center ice options coming into the season. And then they tried Pospisil, and that experiment didn't work. And then they tried Sharon Govich, and it was okay. And then they're like, okay, it's time to try Zeri. And since moving Zeri there, he's been by far the best option. He goes down. You move Sharon Govich back. And again, he's been okay. In the nine games he's played, he's underwater. And this is what has always been my criticism's the wrong
concern.
Word. It's just always been the, like, Sharon Govich. It's not a 200-foot. It's not a very good 200-foot game when Sharon Govich is down the middle. Technically, I mean, typically, it's a lot of time defending, a lot of time in his own zone. Despite an ozone start almost at 65%, he's under 47% on his 5-on-5 possession and bleeding chances. Since Zeri's gone down, 5-on-5, Sharon Govich has been on the ice for 23 high danger chances against and just 13-4. So I just. It's a fine stopgap, and I think he's done a little bit better than I thought he was going to do long-term playing down the middle. And of late, you're seeing a little bit more offense coming, which is an important part because there was a little while there, didn't matter where he was playing, where he wasn't doing a whole lot for you defensively, and he wasn't producing, and you're just like, what exactly are we getting here from Sharon Govich? But it just. Expected goals at 41%. It's just it has not been a position that suits him the best. But when you're short on centers and then you lose the guy that finally had maybe helped solve that issue for the rest of the season, he goes down. Yeah, I'm not going to be too critical. I just think long term, Zeri's the better fit there.
Let me put a little caveat or maybe an asterisk on it, because if Sharon Govich, Pospisil, and Kuzmenko continue to have that chemistry, that makes my thought of moving Zeri to the wing when he comes back a lot easier to execute, because you now have a third line that you can trust. And the Calgary Flames, well, in that gap between
how
Zeri going down.
How much can you
down,
trust that
but,
line?
Well, if they go out and they generate two goals a game for me, I'm less concerned about getting out chanced or.
Are you expecting them to do that?
I mean, they've done, again, small samples. I'm not suggesting that this is going to be something that's going to happen for the rest of the season, but we've seen these two players be streaky before very clearly. And the two I'm talking about, Kuzmenko and Sharon Govich, if they can continue to produce what they found in the short time that they have over the course of the last three or four games, I think that buys you more runway to have Zeri ramp up on the wing.
It's been fine. I'm more of a proponent for see if you can try Kuzmenko. If he's going to continue to be a little bit more impactful, see if you can get him maybe playing with the Huberdeau line, because that's something that I think would be interesting. I just don't think they've been exciting at both ends, I guess is what I'd say. They've bled a lot of chances and they've struggled defensively, but there was also the one game specifically against Minnesota where they had a lot of success offensively. And if you're able to get the offense from them, then, yeah, to me, like, it's a no-brainer. Zeri's been your best center not named Backlund or Kadri, and that hasn't been close this year. Why wouldn't you want him back there as soon as possible? I get what you're saying about easing him back in, and I think you could easily do that, but as long as the eventual goal is for him to go back to the place where he was excelling at.
Yeah, I'm not sitting here advocating that he become a full-time winger for the rest of his NHL career, even the duration of the season. I just remember last year, and refresh my memory, you're going to be really good at this. I'm kind of poor at this. Wasn't he sat one game as a healthy scratch because he wasn't doing the things that made him.
His pace wasn't very good, yeah.
So that's one of the elements I'm trying to guard against, is he was so confident going in and getting injured. I want to make sure that I'm fostering an environment for him that he comes back just as confident and by stripping him of the regular responsibilities that a center has to perform out there, I think you can sort of put him in a situation where he's on an offensive line. He can still be a driver, but he can be a complementary piece, and he gets his feet under him, he gets his legs under him before you move him back to the middle and give him all that responsibility.
This was head coach Ryan Huska asked about Yegor Sharangovich and this most recent 9-game run down the middle.
He's starting to generate more, which I always kind of thought would be the opposite when he was on the wing. I felt like he would have more chances. It just earlier in the year they weren't going for them, but I think he's found some chemistry with the two line mates over the last little while. I think he likes playing with both of them, and one, he's still able to be responsible like we always know he is, but then at the same time I think he's got Kuzmenko, who's feeling much better about his game, and Posp, who's doing a lot of the skating and heavy lifting on the line. So I've liked that line in particular here over the last little while, and he's a big part of that.
Just remains a giant puzzle in terms of what the best combinations are. Like, I still don't know what the best combination is. I still don't know who the best right winger is for Kadri and Huberto.
Right.
There's really one line that you're like, yes, that line has worked, and that's the Backlund line. Otherwise, it's been like, okay, what do we do? Well, I guess we try this. What about that? I mean, the fact the Flames are sitting here 1 point out of a playoff spot entering action Thursday night and still right there in the mix and not going anywhere in this playoff battle and haven't really been able to find lines that have stuck at all this year is pretty incredible when you think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. The fact that there's so many questions among the top 12 forwards on the team and what combinations to use there, and the fact that the Calgary Flames aren't the highest scoring team by nature anyways, the fact that they're 1 point back of the Vancouver Canucks with a game at hand really sort of, you got to tip your hat a little bit to the commitment to structure first and foremost, because you can't be a low scoring team and lack structure and find any sort of success whatsoever. But it, at the same time, does it give you a little bit of optimism that, okay, Huberto, Kadri clicked, and they've been clicking for a large sample size now, so you can
about 2 months now.
You can kind of rest easy a little bit that whoever the third wheel is on that line right now, Jacob Pelletier, you're not as concerned about that trio in terms of what they're able to generate. And as you mentioned, Backlund, Coleman, Coronado is as set of forget as it gets for the Flames. And I'm going to kind of steal a line that you used in describing Zeri. Right now, Sharangovich is the third best center the Flames have. And that's what's forced him back into the middle. I don't think it's necessarily an ideal fit long-term. And we heard Ryan Huska say just now that, you know, he thought the offense might dry up a little bit, moving him back to the middle. And it's not like he was working with a lot of offensive confidence as is, given the fact that he's not scoring at near the same pace as he was last year when he was a 30-goal guy. But this is how it's sort of, and you've got a fourth line, mentioned the fourth line, where I don't know how pleased or happy the coaching staff has been, just generally speaking, on the fourth line since Justin Kirkland was injured. So you've got a lot of questions up front, but you're still finding ways to stay in games and you're finding ways to win games. So that's a tip of the cap to the collective playing to the structure and the identity that the Flames need to play in order to find success.
This text says, I 100% thought Connor broke his leg on that hit. The way his leg whipped and the way he was squeezing the trainer's hand in pain, it could have. Like, you
legs aren't supposed to bend that way.
You could have suggested 17, 18 different injuries, and I would have been like, that could very well be that. It was a scary-looking injury. So that's the good news. Connor Zeri is getting closer. He is ready to return skating in the next week or so on a limited basis, but very limited basis, as head coach Ryan Huska says, but it sure does give you even more confidence that you could see number 47 back in this Flames lineup, helping him out down the stretch after the Four Nations break, where they will have 26 games to go. That'll be just a quick little math for you, because I like doing this every once in a while. That would be the final 31.7% of the season. If you could get him back for part of the final 31.7% of the season, that would 100% help the Flames.
I do believe there's 9 games for the Flames in April, so even if you're talking about a team that's still within reach and competitive, boy, even if you can get him back just for April, that would be a huge shot in the arm for the offense of the Flames.
A few other things to dive into on this Thursday edition of Flames Talk. It's Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you before we hit the Daily Flames Roundtable in the second half of the hour. Kevin Ball's injury situation continues to weigh over the team because now it's like, geez, what do you, as we talked about with Wilsey on the Roundtable Wednesday, like what exactly do you do when it comes to these pairings? They definitely miss him, as we've talked about. Still no real timeline in terms of his return, from what I understand. Like, they're, because of what we think he's dealing with, because we think it's a concussion, because it's a suspected concussion that we're talking about, I think there is a chance he could be back sometime next week before they go on break if everything progresses well. But because it's one of those injuries that's unpredictable, and it is such an important part of your body. If
don't
it
mean
is
to laugh at that,
you're
100% right. Yeah.
Like you need to be very, very deliberate about making sure that every box is checked upon return from that. So could he be back before the break? Yeah, that's a possibility. Might it be the case that he's not ready until a little while after the break is done? Like, you just never know if that's the case. So still no timeline on Connor Zeri, still no timeline definitively on Kevin Ball, and the Flames are taking this the way that they should, and that is, hey, they're being really cautious, and by no means will there be any thought of rushing this guy back. That was a pretty nasty hit that he took, and they definitely miss him, and they definitely would love to have him back as soon as he possibly can. And now I guess we just wait to see how things progress here over the next 4, 5, 6 days. Because if, you know, rushing him back just to get him into games, probably not the probably not the way to go. But if he's ready to go, there's definitely a benefit of having him in a game or two before they hit that break. So I guess we see how it all progresses.
Yeah, if he's ready to go prior to that break and the Flames have 6 games remaining, their final coming on February 8th against the Seattle Kraken, if he's ready to go and you can get him in, that's perfect. If he's not ready, the Flames are one of several teams that are going to benefit from the 2-week Four Nations break with a couple of guys that are banged up or injured, and giving them adequate recovery time. And again, not knowing the full nature of the injury, no timeline whatsoever, but the fact that you have 2 additional weeks where you're not sitting here going, oh, we'd really need to get this guy back in. We'd really love to get him in here. Well, the fact that you don't have any games for 2 weeks allows you to maybe, I don't want to say be more diligent, because there's no doubt with an injury such as this that they're not exercising full due diligence. It just allows for a little bit more patience. And I don't know where you are on this, but I found the Lauko hit on Ball to be a bit more egregious than the Helgason on Zeri. We're talking about 2 different types of hits, and things happen fast. You got one guy in Zeri's case cutting quickly to the middle. In the other one, you've got Laukos kind of staring at the numbers for what I would deem as probably too long to make the hit that he did.
One not got that, 5 in a game. The other guy
got reduced to a 2-minute minor.
Yeah, I actually agree wholeheartedly. Like, I thought that the Lauko hit was clearly not in the rule book. Like, you had a guy who was protecting himself. It's not like you can't even sit there and say, oh, well, don't admire your pass or keep your head up. No, Kevin Ball just was going for a puck and had his back turned slightly, but it's not like he was facing the boards trying to protect the puck. But Lauko still was able to go numbers on him, and because of the way he hit him and kind of diverted path, Ball in a non-vulnerable position, or not overly vulnerable position, still got hit as if he were. I that was an extremely dangerous hit from Lauko, whereas I thought Helleson's bordered on reckless, but there was clearly no intent. I mean, Lauko tried to hit the guy in the numbers. Like, he was numbers all the way is the way it looked, and I can't sit here and tell you what his intent was because I'm not in Lauko's mind, but Helleson looked like he was trying not to, like, he a guy cut on him, and he had already committed to the hit, but tried to lay off it a little bit, and it turned, I didn't think that one of them, I thought was dirty, one of them I thought bordered on reckless, but was mostly unfortunate. The Helleson one I thought was mostly unfortunate. The Lauko one I thought was pretty dirty hit. I still can't believe that they were, you know, I don't lose sleep over it, honestly. I mean, Kevin Ball, and it probably does. Like the, it's like that should have been more than two. And I'm not going to belabor the point for the rest of my career. But anytime you talk about it, it still is hard to believe that thing ended up being only 2 minutes when they called it rightfully a major on the ice.
And on the absolute reverse side, I'm going to nominate you for the Lady Bing for not calling me out for calling him Helgeson. Instead, I had the former Grand Prairie Storm
Helgeson?
And captain of the Calgary Hitmen. Yeah.
Didn't he go and play with the Ducks? Or did his brother play?
He was drafted by the Ducks. Yeah. I don't know if he ever actually made it, to be perfectly honest with you, but given my ties to junior hockey and my ties to Grand Prairie, I don't know why I had Keaton Helgeson on the mind there.
No lineup changes expected Thursday versus Anaheim, which, you know, there is lots to like against the Capitals on Tuesday, so nothing surprising really there, including Dustin Wolf getting the start. And one last thing, we've kind of been talking about this most days this week as Canada continues to make their decision on who replaces Alex Pietrangelo at the Four Nations faceoff. Well, Drew Doughty did return on Wednesday night in a loss to Florida. Played a ton in that loss to Florida. It was like, hey, Drew, you're back. Well, might as well play, you know, 25 minutes again. So Drew Doughty returned, was back to pretty close to his workload. But Rasmus Anderson of the Flames still thinks it should be Uyghur going to the Four Nations.
You know, I think he should be on it. He's been really good, you know, ever since he got to Calgary. And I, you know, especially now when Pietrangelo is not playing, I think Weeksy should definitely be the first call.
And just can you talk with that, you know, flexibility, how he plays in all situations and that importance he's got?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, he's been really good since he got here. And, you know, he's dynamic. He moves the puck. You know, one of the better D-men in the league in moving the puck. And, you know, the flexibility as you talk, he can play both sides. He plays all situations. And, you know, as I said, with Pietrangelo not playing, I think it's a no-brainer to be calling Weeksy for that spot.
See if Canada is listening to fellow Four Nations competitor Rasmus Anderson, but the Swedish defenseman who will be representing the Trey Kroner next month is very adamant that representing the red and white on the other side at some point and potentially in the tournament opener for both teams that it should be Mackenzie Weegar. So, I mean, I think there's plenty of reason for it to be Weegar.
Yep.
I still think that you can make a lot of arguments as to why he would be the best choice, similar to the arguments that you and I made going back to before the entire team was named. Whether or not it actually ends up going that way, I don't know. And the fact that Drew Doughty played almost 25 minutes on Wednesday
23:51 with three
almost
shots and a minus two rating. Said he felt like himself by the third period. I don't know how it's going to go. Endorsement for Ryan from Ryan Huska as well, which probably shouldn't come as a surprise, but I was curious a little bit. Like, on the inside, you're like, I prefer him to go to a beach for a week, rest up, so when he comes back, I can play him 26 minutes a night.
Probably a little bit of both, honestly. It would be awesome to see him, but it would be just as awesome for him to rest up, especially the type of hockey that yep. Uyghur plays. I still feel like they're going to go Doughty. Just based on how Hockey Canada does things, I'm just preparing Flames fans for it, even though, and I'm not saying it's going to happen. I have no prior knowledge. This is just me wondering if Hockey Canada going about it, this feels like they'd go Doughty. But I think there's so many reasons to go Uyghur, so we'll wait and see if they end up doing that. And another reason, Rasmus Anderson thinks it should be Uyghur. It's Steinberg and Vickers along with you this hour on Flames Talk. And speaking of the Four Nations faceoff, which is closing in on 2 weeks away. In fact, I believe we are 2 weeks away from the Four Nations faceoff starting on this Thursday because it starts on February 12th. In fact, we're less than 2 weeks away. It is a Wednesday, February 12th, that things kick off. And on February 12th, the Four Nations faceoff, which has Canada, Finland, Sweden, and the United States taking part in a best-on-best competition from Feb 12 to Feb 20th in Montreal and Boston. And Sportsnet, proud partner of the Four Nations Face-Off, and we are giving you the chance to win a VIP trip to watch a game. So through Rogers Beyond the Seat, we've got four pairs of tickets to give away, plus travel and accommodations to the Four Nations, and we've got a new winner being picked every week until February 7th. So you got the rest of this week and next week to still get in. If you would like to learn more and enter, go to rogers.com/Four Nations, and then check out every single game of the Four Nations Face-Off exclusively on Sportsnet and Sportsnet Plus. And one more time, that website, if you want to enter, more information and a whole lot more, rogers.com/Four Nations.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It is a Thursday edition now of your Daily Flames Roundtable, as the Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. It's Pat Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, and now Derek Wills joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Okay, gents, so Dustin Wolf is going to start Thursday against the Anaheim Ducks. That'll be his 15th start in 20 games. Dating back to December, mid-December, it was December 14th when that run began. So 15 of 20 is what it'll be for Dustin Wolf, including this game against the Ducks. The Flames have six more games before their two-week break for the Four Nations Face-Off. So we know Wolf is going to start this one, and then five games afterwards. So how do you divvy it up, boys? How many of the remaining six, knowing that he's going to start this one, should Dustin Wolf be getting before the break?
Do I have to write this in pen, or can I write it in pencil?
It can change as soon as you turn the mic off.
Okay. In pencil, five. Five of six for Dustin Wolf. And the reason I'm writing that in pencil is because it's going to be based on performance. If he continues to be the guy who gives you the best chance to win, and he is that guy right now, Dan Vladar. And this isn't a shot at just him, but he's lost six straight games. Now, the team has scored way more goals in front of Dustin Wolf than they have Dan Vladar. I still maintain Vladar has had the tougher starts, but Wolf's found a way to win. So if I'm Ryan Huska, assuming everything continues to trend in the direction that it has been for most of the season, I go with Wolf against the Ducks tonight, again against the Red Wings on Saturday night. I go to Vladar for the second half of the back-to-back against the Kraken in Seattle on Sunday. The Flames have played in six back-to-backs this season. They are 5-1 in the first half. They are 1-5 in the second half. Wolf has started the first game. Vladar has started the second game every single time.
Yep.
And then an easy schedule, not as far as opponents are concerned, but as far as how the schedule's broken up is concerned next week. So I go back to Wolf against the Maple Leafs, against the Avalanche, and against the Kraken, because you got a day between all those games. And then you've got a two-week break. So I know he's 23. I know it's his first full season in the NHL, but you are fighting tooth and nail for a playoff spot right now. I think you have to put the best team on the ice, unless it's a back-to-back. And then you got to go with your backup goaltender. But I'd go 5 of 6 unless Wolf falls off here.
Yeah, it's really hard to disagree with that. The only one I can basically guarantee is that February 2nd, and the second of back-to-backs, you're traveling from Calgary to Seattle to play the Kraken. Like, that is
going to be a late night.
That is as much a Dan Vladar start as you can. You can put that one in marker if you want, Willsy, because I think we're safe there. Coming in prior to finding out that Dustin Wolf would start Thursday against Anaheim, I was wondering maybe if that would be an opportunity where you were going to go 4-2 and perhaps potentially give Dan Vladar the Ducks Thursday night, and then that way you can kind of try to space out the load a little bit on Dustin Wolf. But talking to members of the Flames, hearing from Crow, Ryan Huska, points are at such a premium right now, and especially when you wake up Thursday morning and now you're chasing as opposed to trying to defend a spot. Now, game at hand, and you're neck and neck with the Vancouver Canucks, but fact of the matter remains, Dustin Wolf is your option. If you absolutely need 2 points on any given night, you're going to him. And if this schedule even aligned a little bit differently, where there was no back-to-back scenario over the final six games before this break, I wonder if it would have been a Dustin Wolf clean sweep, where if you're just setting it up where it's every second night, you're able to manage the practice time and the minutes that way on Dustin Wolf, and hope that he can maintain his level of, I don't want to say fitness, but level of readiness over that span. But that little back-to-back scenario, that's a tailor-made Dan Vladar start. But I'll agree with you, Wilsey. I think he's going 5-6 now.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that there's that two-week break, I mean, I do think, and we always have had these conversations, and I know, Wilsey, you and I have not always been on the same page about kind of the points mattering, but get, like, if you can have, if there's 20 games and if you start one goalie 20 out of 20, but only get, because of that, 80%, or if you do 18 of 20, but then you get the goalie at 100%, it's tough because you're like, geez, like, what goalie do you play? And if you need the 2 points, you got to go with your number one guy. But I mean, for this stretch, I don't like, I can't really argue with you guys. Like, we've got a 2 week break, and that's a very significant stretch of time. If Wolf was going to play at the Four Nations, different conversation, and maybe he'll be in that conversation in a year's time when they're naming Olympic teams. But right now, he's not. He will not be playing in the Four Nations. He's got time to rest up. He's got time to recover. All that type of stuff. So yeah, I mean, unless the play falls off, which he has shown no signs of doing. Yeah, the only game I'm putting him in for is that second half of the back-to-back. And when Vix and I talked about it a little earlier this week, we were like, well, maybe you do both Seattle games, the final game and the second half of the back-to-back. And I was like, yeah, okay, yeah, maybe go both. And I'm like, you know what? Like,
then you got more than 2 weeks between Wolf starts.
Yes.
Well, I mean, technically, you're going to basically run into that scenario anyways. So you're just giving him an extra 2 days.
It'd be another 2 days. It would, and then I guess you'd make it so that you're not going 5 weeks, perhaps, between Vladar starts when it's all said and done. But honestly, the more I thought about it, the more you think about how unique that 2 week break is, the more I felt, yeah, just don't push it in the back to back. And otherwise, unless you get the sense that, you know, fatigue is starting to play in, then yeah, you start him in every game that's not a second half of back to back for this stretch until the 2 week break. And then I think it's a different conversation after the 2 week break, or it could be a different conversation. But for now, I think you've got this really easy demarcation point to work up to, and playing him in 5 of the 6 makes nothing but sense at this point.
Yeah, and Dan Vladar has played some pretty good games. He just doesn't get enough goal support and hasn't been able to find a way to win. And once in a while, you need even your number two goaltender to steal a game for you. And maybe he's due to do that this Sunday, and I expect that he will start that game against the Kraken. And it's going to be a long night / a short night for the Flames. 8 o'clock start here at Scotiabank Saddledome. And then it's not a long flight from Calgary. I'm not sure if we're flying into SeaTac or Everett, maybe Everett because of the time. But you do gain an hour back, but there'll be no morning skate the next day. I'm sure whoever's starting in goal will have some shooters just firing pucks at him. But, yeah, I definitely would go back to Dan Vladar against the Kraken on Sunday. But I see no reason not to lean on Dustin Wolf. Let me ask you this, guys. Forget Dustin Wolf exists for a minute. If this is Jacob Markstrom, healthy, in any of the last four seasons, 5 out of 6 for him?
Yeah.
Like, that's safe to say, right?
Absolutely. At minimum.
He might be a guy
that would push to play both ends of the back-to-back.
Oh, he would.
With this break coming up, yeah, it would be the same thing.
Right?
Yeah.
And this is not a 1A, 1B anymore. This is Dustin Wolf's the number one, Dan Vladar's the number two. And that's with all due respect to Vladar. And again, and I sounded like a broken record saying this, he's had the tougher assignments. Mm-hmm. That's just the way it is. And I think the Flames have handled their 23-year-old rookie goaltender brilliantly this season, trying to continue to build him up. But Dustin Wolf, I just feel like he gives the Flames a better chance to win hockey games right now. Not that I'm saying that I don't think Dan Vladar gives them a chance to win. I think he did in his last start. But Wolf gives him a better chance to win night in, night out. So 5 out of 6 for me.
And that's why I agree with you. I can't remember if it was Tuesday against Washington or last week against Buffalo, but post-game Ryan Huska basically said, we need as many points as we can right now because that's where we're at. And asking Nazem Kadri today, it was kind of an off-the-cuff question, but I'm like, are you scoreboard watching right now? And his response was, we have an ISO cam on it right now. So that tells you how important each and every game is for the Flames right now leading into this break. 5 of 6 makes the most sense.
And hey, the Kings playing tonight.
Yeah.
Climbed to within 1 point of them for third place in the Pacific Division. Back to Wolf for just a quick second. Pat, we have a chance to chat with Ryan Huska before every game. And you asked him a great question this morning. You said, hey, with this increased workload, are you worried about Dustin Wolf and his energy levels? I'm paraphrasing, of course. And the head coach's answer was interesting. He said, nope, he's doing just fine. So that was certainly good to hear, and that certainly has me leaning towards him getting 5 out of 6 games before the Four Nations break.
Yeah, basically I said, hey, like, how is he dealing with the increased workload?
Yeah.
I said, fine. And especially with 2 weeks coming up, I think it just seems like a no-brainer, unless the performance drops. I mean, there's always the caveats for those types of things, but all things being equal, seems like we're all on the same page. It's Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg, Daily Flames Roundtable. Gents, against the Ducks, the last time these two teams played, Drew Helleson tried to lay a hit on Connor Zary as Connor Zary was cut into the middle. As a result, Helleson went knee-on-knee with Zary, and Zary hasn't played since. He's been out for 9 games, and it sounds like he's going to be able to start skating on a kind of scaled-back basis starting sometime next week, which is good news. But when it's all said and done, if we assume that Zary doesn't play until after the break, he'll be missing at minimum 15 games with that injury. Do we expect any retribution in the game? Like, does Drew Helleson have to answer any bells in this game against the Flames tonight?
Were there any ambulances circling Scotiabank Saddle Dome with the lights flashing and the sirens blaring before the game, like
nice
in
pull.
Slapshot?
Nice.
Are you asking if the Flames are going to raise hell, listen, with the Ducks in town tonight?
I see what you did there.
It's a valiant
effort.
Laugh. I can't make anybody else laugh.
It's a valiant
effort. Myself laugh,
points
worth
for
it.
Effort, yeah.
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, I've watched that hit about 100 times. I don't think there was any ill intent. You know who made that play on, I wouldn't say a regular basis, but once in a while? Mark Giordano.
Yes.
Where
he got suspended for it a couple times.
Yeah, he felt like he was about to get beat, and we knew there was no ill intent with Gio, but I think it was just a reflex to kind of stick your leg out there. I think that's what happened with Drew Helleson. I don't think he was trying to hurt Connor Zary. I feel like he realized he was about to get beat and had to react quickly. And, you know, Zary kind of left his leg hanging out there too. But with that said, you never know. If this game doesn't get off to a good start for the Flames, I could see someone, whether it be Ryan Lomberg or somebody else, maybe trying to turn the tide by going after Drew Helleson, or maybe you take a run at one of their top players. But I guess I would be a little bit surprised, because I think the Flames' focus has to be on winning this hockey game as opposed to getting retribution. I think about the season opener where, you know, there was that very questionable hit, JT Miller on Kevin Rooney on his first shift of the season. And for the rest of that first period, all the Flames seemed to care about was getting back at JT Miller. And as a result, they're down 4-1 through 20 minutes. Now, they battled back to win that game, and I still think that game in so many ways really did set the tone for the season. We've talked about how this team has really had each other's backs. I think that's where it started, fellas. And we talked about how this team never gives up on a game. Again, I think that's where it started. Down 4-1 through 20 minutes, you battle back, you win the season opener 6-5 in overtime. But I think there was a lesson to be learned there. So unless the Flames get off to a tough start tonight, fall behind in this hockey game, and feel like they maybe need to do something to turn the tide, I don't know that with so many with points meaning so much right now that they're going to allow themselves to get distracted. But again, this is a team that they stick up for each other. So I never say never.
I don't see a whole lot of bell answering going on. Helleson doesn't necessarily have a reputation for hits like this. He's got one fight in his pro career coming back in 2023. Do you go out of your way and finish an extra check or two? Maybe that's the extent of what it goes to, but I don't think we see a member of the Calgary Flames trying to chase him down. And just a stick tap to Wes Gilbertson, who talked to Helleson, I believe, on Wednesday. Helleson texted Zary the next day, you know, in letting him know, I didn't mean any harm. I hope you're doing okay. So took the steps from an off-ice perspective to reach out to a player that was on the receiving end of that hit. So I don't know if I necessarily see the Calgary Flames trying to chase him around, or if we see gloves fly off the opening faceoff.
Ball in the hall.
Yeah, maybe you just throw an extra hit or two, but like I don't think this is going to be a sideshow or even a subplot or a footnote of this game.
You took my two big things. I was going to tell you about the one fight that he's had, and I was going to talk about Wes Gilbertson.
We were both just piggybacking off Wes Gilbertson's work.
I went to hockeyfights.com, and it was against my brother, Matt Steinberg.
Did your brother win? Is it fighting in the family?
Do they have a decision? They don't have a decision on here. Anyway, and Drew Helison is not. I mean, he's a big guy, but he's not what you would call a bruising guy. So I don't think obliging Ryan Lomberg makes a lot of sense, because Ryan Lomberg may not be a heavyweight, but he's one of the best like fighters in the NHL. He's used to it. He's good at it. And so it might have to be somebody else. I could see it, and I could see him, you know, being a defenseman, knowing that, you know, he hurt a guy and knowing that dropping the gloves could squash it and could squash it right then and there. And I could see something like that. Like, I could see somebody say, hey, you know, you hurt our guy, not in like a we're going to get you way, but hey, let's do this. You hurt our guy, let's drop
hockey
him.
Hockey code.
Yeah, yeah, kind of more the hockey code. And then you drop him. He's texted Zeri. He's been like, hey, I didn't mean to, and it wasn't a dirty – I wasn't trying to go for it, and here's the situation. And then you go from there to, okay, now I'll drop the gloves and quote-unquote answer the bell, and then it's over, it's done with, and, you know, you don't really ever have to think about that again on either side. I could see that happening, but no. Do I see to Wilsey's point, do I see ambulances circling around the Saddle Dome or anything like that? No, I don't think this is going to be fight night on Thursday between the Flames and Ducks.
If someone does go after him, and I'm not predicting that that is going to happen, I'm not saying that that should happen. Obviously, Ryan Lomberg would be at the top of the list, but what about Adam Klapka? A big guy who isn't an enforcer. We talked about that this morning, but the Flames need more from their fourth line. That is clear. And the head coach has not been afraid to say that. And if you're playing on that fourth line, you have to find different ways to impact a game and to help your team win. And that line, when it's right, can play with energy, can get in the forecheck and spend time in the offensive zone. They've spent too much time in the defensive zone and have been on the ice for too many goals against of late. But, you know, if you're Adam Klapka trying to establish yourself in this league, that's one way to do it.
I just don't think it would be fair for Lomberg to do. I feel like that's fun. I again, Helison's got the size advantage on that, but I feel like the experience and the general ability to toss him is a little lopsided. I don't know. But maybe that's where Adam Klapka steps in instead.
Well, regardless, that's our Daily Flames roundtable. He's Derek Wills. He's Aaron Vickers.
One other dad joke before I go?
Might as well.
I don't have any. Sorry. Bye.
What the hell? What the Helison are you talking about? Okay.
Stealing my bit over here.
I would have liked one. You both are very adept at dad jokes. I will give you that. Very, very talented at that.
Nothing could be farther
both
from the truth.
Nothing could be my father from the truth. You know, that movie came out in 2002. Goldmember came out in 2002, and it still makes me laugh more than 20 years later. Like, it still doesn't feel like it's that old. For me, it's a dad issue. Dad issue! Okay, we got to go to break. That'll do it on the Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, just minutes from the airport.